Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Hear it from the doctor with expert guests from the American Academy of Pediatrics. It's Healthy Children. Now, our favorite mom, Melanie Cole, MS.
When your child gets sick or injured, it's so natural to panic and head straight for the emergency room. You know, but you want to make sure that you plan ahead and bring the right things with you, because sometimes you might get there and the doctor might say, well, when was their last tetanus shot? And you think to yourself, I don't even know if they've ever had one. Well, my guest is Dr. Deborah Ann Mulligan. She's the chief medical officer for MD Live. And so, Dr. Mulligan, are there certain things that ER docs want us to either know on hand, keep on a medical zip drive, keep with us, and or bring and always have available to go if we have to go to the ER?
Hey, that's a great question, and I appreciate you asking it so we can help your audience in being ready. You know, first and foremost, do the best you can to stay calm. And if you can do that even just for a little bit of time, it'll help you to think in advance of just that very issue. Besides scooping up your child and anyone else in the house that needs to go with you on that drive to the emergency department, you'll remember to take those things with you that were part of that incident. So if your child, cut themselves on something, make sure that you have a nice tight bandage on it before you drive to the ER. And as well, as you mentioned, to try and remember to bring their immunization record. Now, not everybody's going to remember where did I put that little card, and they're not going to spend a lot of time trying to find it. So alternatives in being ready for your child's comprehensive medical record so that you don't have to think about anything is to have it always available on a little zip drive or a flash drive that you have tied to your keychain, so it's always with you. And or if you have a personal health record, many people have those nowadays. At MD Live, for example, people can fill out their entire family health record, which can then be used in the emergency department by simply opening up that link, and everything's right there, so you don't have to worry about forgetting any detail.
That's such a great resource, and what a great idea. So now also, if our child has been, say, if we think they've ingested stuff, do we bring in the product? I mean, do we grab, you know, if you find your child sitting in front of something or whatever, I mean, how do you know what to actually bring in as far as, or the thing they cut themselves on? Do you bring that in to see if it's rusty?
I paused on the laceration idea because I knew that you would ask me that follow-up question. I appreciate you asking the important follow-up question about poisons. First and foremost, the best thing in all of this is prevention. So we want to literally get on the ground and look at eye level if we have a baby or a toddler. You know, you're so much taller, you might not even see what is in their vision that they might be curious about getting involved with and playing with. And so never, never, never put household products under the sink, even though construction of a home always has that space available for easy access to soaps and cleaning materials. Just don't put anything down there, period. And always lock the handles, et cetera, on the doors and latches on the cupboards. But if your child should get into something, no matter how careful you are, the first thing you want to do is call the Poison Control Center. You do not want to scoop and run to the ER. Make the call to the emergency, the Poison Control Center. They have accessible to them the ability to answer your question on anything your child could have possibly put in their mouth.
Okay, so we want to always call the Poison Control Center, and there is a national hotline, isn't there?
That is correct. I'm going to look it up for us to make sure. I don't even want to say the number because I want to make sure we give them the right one. So I'm going to look that up.
Well, while you're looking that up, tell us, when we're going to the emergency room, is there something the emergency room doctors would like to tell parents as they come running in, saying whatever's going on? Is there something you really want parents to say, come on now, this is what the doctor wants from you?
I'm not sure. Hold on. Here we have the Poison Control Center number. It's very easy, 800-222-1222.
800-222-1222. It's 800, and they will direct you to your local poison control and help you with whatever.
And they will absolutely. They will answer your question immediately as to whether you can relax or you need to go to the emergency department. We no longer advise getting Ipecac anymore unless that is directly told to you by someone at the poison control center.
So there is no more Ipecac, and we are going to talk in another segment about injuries that you can treat at home. But so, Dr. Mulligan, when you're going to the emergency room and you're there, and do doctors want you to step back and get out of the way, or do they want you holding your child's hand, keeping them calm? What do you want from us?
No, everyone would say uniformly, we want you to be there to support your child. You know your child better than anyone else. You are the historian for that child's life. You have their best interest in mind. You are the best advocate for your little one. And provided you can maintain some element of calm so that the doctors and nurses in the environment can do whatever they need to do in an urgent or emergent setting, and that you feel comfortable being nearby. Some people don't want to be present if there's a dire emergency which requires extreme measures to support the life of a child. Other people are very comfortable with that, and what we do in all cases, whether it's simple urgent need or even in those times, those sad and tragic times where there might have been a car crash or a drowning incident and the child needs to be intubated and resuscitated by a intensive care emergency care team, we always welcome the parents to be in that room and to be nearby the head of the bed so that they can, as you said, hold their child's hand or whisper to the child or whatever they want to do to maintain that connection of love to the child.
And, you know, how does the parent then, Dr. Mulligan, sit there and watch all of this be done? And not, I mean, you know, we've seen all the shows where they make the parent leave the room and all of this stuff, because can we handle that, watching something needed to be done to our child? Is that going to calm the child down, or are they going to sense our anxiety and freak out more?
You know, as I mentioned, each is a different scenario. So in an urgent care scenario, you're right. Depending on the parent or depending on the family member that's in the room, they may create a more agitated experience because they're exhibiting fear and worry, which escalates the fear and worry of the child. Naturally, if your parent is upset and panicking, you as their child know there's something desperately wrong here, and so you're not going to be able to calm down either. Those are not helpful to anybody in those scenarios, and so we have a conversation with that adult and ask them if they can, how we try to help them find a way to be more relaxed, and if they can't, then the best interest of the child, of course, is to sometimes ask them to sit quietly outside if it's too upsetting to them. Most of the time, that never happens. I mean, that's so rare. Most of the time, people can
rise to the occasion.
Rise to the occasion and be there to help their child, because that, at the end of the day, is their primary concern. What can I do to help my child get better?
In the last 30 seconds here, Dr. Mulligan, if it's a true emergency, give us your little quick list of reasons we really should go to the emergency room, certain cuts, breaks, choking, whatever.
You betcha. That's a good question. When is it really an emergency? Signs of an actual emergency would be things like child's unconscious or not responsive when you talk to them, rhythmic jerking and loss of consciousness, such as the seizure, increasing effort or trouble with breathing, blue lips, neck stiffness with rash or a fever. I mean, many of these you might think are so obvious, but they're not always obvious to the person in the moment. Increasing or severe persistent pain after a cut or an injury, a deep cut that's large and involves the head, the chest, or the belly, bleeding that doesn't stop after you've applied pressure for a good 5 minutes, a burn that involves the hands, feet, groin, chest, or face, any bicycle or car crashes. It's hard to know right away if there's internal injury or not on a child. Falls that are more than something from a short height. Sports injuries, smoke inhalation, near drowning, all bring them in.
Well,
with electrical shocks and poisoning.
And that's all we have time for. Thank you so much. You're listening to Healthy Children.